Welcome to episode 14 of the Golf Betting System podcast. We are talking AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am on the PGA Tour and the World Super 6 on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me this evening is our European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Evening to you, Paul. How are you?
Good evening, Steve. Yes, I'm very well. How are you?
Struggling, if truth be told. The whole weight of the whole of golf betting's on my shoulders after last week.
Oh, yeah.
We'll go into that in a second. Resident guest Barry O'Hanrahan, he's missing in duty this week as he's taking in the delights of doubling this evening, so I can't say I blame you on that one. So we've got no Barry this week. Hopefully he's back next week. A bit of housekeeping for you as ever before we move ahead. www.golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website. Twitter handles, Steve Bamford, that's me, I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Thanks again to all listeners. The numbers last week on the podcast, the listener numbers were fantastic. And we're very, very pleased with the amount of you who are listening and obviously getting something positive. So thank you for that. If you're listening on iTunes, reviews are always most welcome on that. And I also want to highlight this week something that's a little bit new at Golf Betting System. Now, I've put a link beneath the description if you're listening to this on Podbean. I've also put a link to it in my first paragraph on this week's AT&T Pebble National preview that I've pulled together. Basically, we are tracking and have been tracking since last year the amount of each-way places that bookmakers are giving us. Now, we take into account, I think it's 12, 13 online bookmakers, and we're just basically tracking each week who are giving extended each-way places. Now, it's last year we just did it on the PGA Tour, but this year, as of January, we've added the European Tour to that as well. So there's some really interesting information on there about basically where you can get the most amount of additional each-way places. And as of January, across January, that bookmaker was Coral. They offered additional places over all tournaments on both the European Tour and the PGA Tour. And in total, they offered 17 additional places for each-way punters. They were followed up by Paddy Power and Betfair Sportsbook on 15 additional places. I'm not going to go into any more detail, but if you want to find out more, I've signposted exactly where you can go to this bit piece of each-way research that we're going to keep up to date throughout 2018. As you know, Paul, often getting the best price and also the best each-way places can really bring some extra profit and value to you, especially when it comes to kind of hectic leaderboards like we saw at Phoenix last week.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you've got an option to take seven places, I know the bookies have generally gone to a fifth of the odds now outside the majors for any of the extended places. But even so, seven and a fifth does give you that extra opportunity to get some return, and particularly on your longer shots, it makes a lot of sense. And as we saw last week again, the likes of Hadley coming in tied sixth. In days gone past, you yourself wouldn't have got a return for that. You got a reduced return for it. Actually, came tied fifth, but you get the gist. It would have been further reduced for ties. So the more places you can take, you know, bearing in mind the price needs to be the right price. If you're getting absolutely screwed on the price, then maybe not. But yeah, it's a great piece of work, actually. So well worth a look, as Steve said.
I think in this day and age as well, bookmakers can't just slash the places week in, week out and just pay the odds rather and pay out extra places. The thing that always gets me with Coral and Paddy Power and Betfair, they are all competitive on price, but they're just giving away extra additional places. You know, that's just the fact of the matter. I know that it might be something that you're doing soon in terms of looking at odds and who are also giving the best odds over a period of time, but we'll talk about that another day. Let's get into the tournaments this week. Or in fact, let's not. I think let's do what we did last week, Paul. What did we learn this week? So you crack on. What did you learn last week in terms of the two tournaments that you were watching?
Well, firstly, the Malaysian track was... I'd kind of got it down and in my notes and from what I'd seen of the track before, I'd kind of got it down more of a risk-reward type track. And the reality is it's far tighter than that. You can go around there and play particularly well. You can score very heavily. We saw a couple of 62s last week, one of which was by Shubhanka Sharma at the end to take the tournament. And if you're hitting fairways, hitting greens, you can make birdies there. If you're slightly offline, you're getting tree trouble, you're taking bogeys and doubles, and there were some big numbers there. There was some sevens and eights all the way through, particularly from some of my players. And the only one of mine that actually made the weekend was Alex Levy, and he had a couple of decent chances to make a move on Saturday in particular, but he making some big numbers here and there. And that's just where he was a bit too aggressive, and he was getting stuck behind trees or making doubles or trebles or quads, as it ended up. So yeah, it was a bit frustrating. The other big note for me was the green speed over there in Malaysia was incredibly slow. And often with these Bermuda green tracks, the greens often get up to kind of 11, 12 plus on the stimp, and these weren't. These were down in the 9, 10 type bracket. So they were very slow for Bermuda, and the track was tight. It's far closer correlation to the likes of Fanling and Hong Kong, which when you bear in mind, I put up Scott Hend, who'd won in Fanling. There obviously was some logic there, but yeah, it's a big note for my notes for next year along those lines.
So it was clearly, it was a plotter's track, effectively, yeah? Rather than pure aggression.
Well, yes and no. You look at the winning score 20 under, you know, and when guys are going out there and shooting 62 and making 10 birdies in a round, clearly it is scorable. Equally, you've got to play well. So it's a bit of a mix. It's you're likely to see different styles of players on that leaderboard over the years, and you saw the likes of Ryan Fox up there, who's one of the longer hitters, and he's managed to get himself into an each way place. So it's not all about metronomic tee to green play, but you've got to play well. Simple as that. You've got to be able to adjust to the slower greens. Get on with the grainy Bermuda and make your score that way, and not make too many mistakes. There were birdies there. I mean, Hend, who did miss the cut, he missed the cut on the number, and he made four straight birdies at the end to put himself inside the cut mark at the time, quite a way inside, but clearly, you know, the scoring was low enough to knock him out by the time the second wave had gone through on Friday. So yeah, disappointing week. I'd also gone for Hao Tong Lee, who'd won the week before, but the reality was, even though he'd won twice back-to-back in his career, early doors in his career, he was clearly jaded. He was clearly wasn't 110% focused on backing that up last week, and yeah, you live and learn.
Absolutely. Phoenix, that was an interesting tournament.
Yeah, it always is. I always enjoy it, actually.
I didn't watch it last night, I have to be honest. I was absolutely knackered after my missus' 40th birthday party on Saturday, and my son getting some kind of scarlet fever yesterday. So hospital trips, blah, blah, blah. I was absolutely exhausted. So I was in bed at some crazy hour in the morning. In the evening, sort of 8 o'clock or something. I was absolutely exhausted. And all I kept dreaming about was what was happening in the Gulf. And at no point did Ricky Fowler ever win in my dream. And sure enough, when I woke up in the morning, that was the case. But I never expected to see Gary Woodland and Che Reavie in a playoff. Never came into anywhere in my mindset whatsoever.
I guess it kind of fits with, you know, you wanted ball strikers who. Yeah. You know, ball strikers who can, can occasionally get hot enough on the greens to compile a score. And Gary had been putting reasonably well. I mean, if you followed him for the last couple of weeks, you'd have been pulling your hair out because you'd have probably given up after the second, after last week, where, you know, he was in a cracking position and fell away at the end. And he pops up and wins the week after at 50-1. It's that's exactly what golf punting's all about. You sometimes got to be kind of blind to these things that are happening and just and stick with the players if you've been backing them for a couple of weeks. But
Phoenix always feels to me about it's always total driving at Scottsdale.
Yeah. No, I would agree.
Total driving, and the putter really does take a serious backseat. The thing with Gary was he'd actually been putting quite well going into it. Yeah. But as per usual, I suppose it was a little bit like how... Oh, no, it wasn't. But you had the a situation with Hao Tong Lee, didn't you, where completely missed the cut at Abu Dhabi, wasn't in, and it came out that he was poorly. Then the next week he blitzes it. The thing with Gary was he was in great spot at Torrey Pines, and he did his usual Gary Woodland Sunday performance. And when you always see 50 to 1 about him every single time, you know that his stats are always there or thereabouts, and you just always think to yourself, well, the bloke never wins.
Yeah, no, it can be frustrating backing a player like that, particularly if you do give it up before he has that one decent, and it's one day, isn't it? It's a decent Sunday that gets him over the line, and whereas the previous Sunday, what did he shoot, 75 something?
Yeah,
like that.
He did, but I mean, I'm just looking at his numbers here. He was almost a stroke gained positive on putting at the Sony, where he was seventh. He was 1.7 strokes up on putting at Torrey Pines. And you're thinking, this is Gary Woodland. Yeah, and then he's kept that nice warm putter going at Phoenix, a course where he can give it absolute death off the tee. He was fifth for total driving. So yeah, 3-9, he was eighth for driving distance and 19th for accuracy. And it just worked a treat for him, didn't it? Fair play to him. I always liked Gary Woodland. I he's one of those players that you do think there's something about him.
I know, you've picked him up before. I vaguely remember you picking him up at Reno or something like that, 66-1 or so.
Yeah.
In fact, there's another altitude track, so there's clearly some correlation there with the tracks he gets on with, or styles, or different attributes that you can pin to a particular tournament that can help you find a winner. And as I say, if you could overlook the fact that what had happened the previous week, and the fact that he does often get into those kind of positions and doesn't convert, and then 50-1 in hindsight looks like a decent price.
It does, yeah.
Particularly with some of the players that were there in the mix that you would have expected to convert. I mean, looking at the leaderboard going into Sunday, you got Ricky Fowler there, you got John Rahm there. For all the world, you'd have said it was a two-horse race between those two guys, and what happens in the end? Neither of them even plays. Both outside the top 10.
There is something about both Torrey Pines and TPC Scottsdale where the leaders very rarely actually convert. I know at Torrey Pines it hasn't happened for time immemorial. And at TPC Scottsdale, I think the only one that did it in recent times was Mickelson that year where he shot 27 under. And the golf course was as soft as you liked it. No one got close to him at all. But apart from that, no one in the first place has actually won that tournament since 2009.
Yes, we get quite a spate of these where you've got players who are coming into the 54-hole lead and not converting. And it's a trader's dream potentially to just be laying these 54-hole leaders each week and make a packet out.
I've worked it out. Last four tournaments, I've had Harman, I've had John Rahm, and I've had Ricky Fowler be 36 or 54 hole leaders. And I've only got one small each way place back on Harm.
I think you're due, Mr. Bamford.
Thank you.
I think it's coming.
Let's talk AT&T Pebble Beach first. With respect to the Super Six, I think it's clearly the bigger tournament, and the field this week is absolutely fantastic. I'll just walk you through it in terms of the betting. Dustin Johnson, 13-2. We know he's a two-time winner here and loves Pebble. John Rahm at 10s. These prices I'm reading out are tea time on Monday evening over here in the UK. Rory McIlroy, who's making his tournament debut here, is 11-1. With Jason Day at 11s. Jordan Spieth, the defending champion, is 12-1. I can't remember the last time we saw Jordan Spieth at 12-1, but there you go, he's 12-1. Then we've got last week's winner, Gary Woodland at 25s. Then the likes of Paul Casey, Phil Mickelson, Brandon Grace, Brant Snedeker, who we know plays brilliantly around here, Pat Perez, Matt Kuchar, Patrick Reed, Patrick Candley, even Adam Scott. And there's some decent names below that in the betting as well. It is loaded. It's a fantastic field. It's a pro-am. It's a big field as well. It's one of the biggest fields of the year. I think it's 168 players. And it's played over three golf courses. So there's going to be plenty of action this week. The coverage that we get is absolutely mind-bogglingly boring. But I just always tend to tune in on the Saturday and the Sunday just to get my head around it.
Yeah, so you can actually see the players by then and not the...
And not Kenny G. Not,
yeah, absolutely.
All these non-American people, whatever. But yes, it's a good tournament in terms of the players that tend to do well here. Let me just talk listeners quickly through the concept. It's a 72-hole pro-am. But only the 25 best pro-am teams play on the Sunday. So it's a little bit different to the one that we saw, the Career Builder, a few weeks ago. So you do get amateurs playing all the way through the 72 holes with the top 25. It's played across three courses, Pebble Beach Golf Links. And you may ask, well, why are so many of these top players coming to the AT&T this week? Well, it's because the 2019 US Open is being played at Pebble Beach, so it makes some sense that we've got a better field this year. Two other courses involve Spyglass Hill and also the Shore course at Monterey Peninsula. Now, it's a little bit quirky. The Monterey Peninsula Shore course is a par 71. The other two courses, Pebble Beach and Spyglass, are both 72. And it's one of those tournaments, because it's a pro-am, it tends to be a scenario where it's as tough as the weather. And last year there was quite a lot of nasty-ish weather Thursday and Friday morning. And when the weather and the wind was blowing and it was raining, Jordan Spieth kind of got himself to the top of the leaderboard and was never headed. This year it looks like it's going to be tranquil. It looks like it's going to be very sunny, but it looks like it's going to be very European type temperatures. So we're seeing kind of 20, 21 degrees Celsius Thursday, Friday, and then it gets cooler. And I think on the Sunday there's nothing warmer than about 17 degrees. So European kind of temperatures. And the only wind I'm really seeing is a little bit of breeze up to kind of 15, 17 mile an hour gusts on the Saturday. So for me, with course conditions probably not being as soft as we saw last year, I still think that we're looking with such calmness, something around the sort of 22 under, something along that. 19 under was Spieth last year. Vaughan Taylor was 17 under, weird conditions in 2016. Snedeker won here at 22 under and 19 under. I reckon anything around about that 20 under mark is what's going to be required this week. And that...
Lots of birdies then.
Yeah, plenty of birdies.
Lots of birdies.
So it's either going to be kind of mid-score up to 17, 18. But for me, I think they're going to go a little bit lower this year just because it's so calm. So I think 20 under. So if you're straight 67s across the week, you're going to be right in the mix. And that's easier said than done here, because the main characteristics of the course, they're all very short. They've all got the main course, Pebble, for this has got wide fairways. So even the most wild drivers can be hitting over 50% of fairways. But the greens are extremely small. We're talking, on average, 3,500 square feet. They're the smallest on tour. So you've really got to pick your way around. You've got to be hitting. I'll dig out my sheet. Brant Snedeker won here 2013, 77.78 GIR. He was sixth. Jimmy Walker was sixth in 2014. That was really blowy that year. Snedeker was 82% of greens in 2015, tied third. Vaughan Taylor was 75% tied second, and Jordan Spieth last year was 79.17 tied second. Third. You've got to hit tons and tons of greens this week.
They're good numbers for the size of the green.
Yeah, exactly. It feels plotterish to me. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, with Torrey Pines a couple of weeks ago, Jason Day bludgeoned his way around. Mm. And Jason Day has got a good record here. You can know why, because the Poa greens and it's all feels kind of the same. He's got a chance this week, that's undoubted. But it just feels like you've got to have the ability to be hitting over 75% of greens in regulation. And when you're talking small 3,500 square feet greens, that is not an easy task.
No.
Not an easy task at all. My key skill sets I'm looking for: bogey avoidance, birdie or better, clearly. I think you've got to be able to scramble, and particularly scramble from the rough. But I've always got this course or this tournament down in my mind, and you can disagree with me. For me, it's putters who are hitting lots of greens at the moment rather than ball strikers. It's completely different to Phoenix.
Yeah, well, given that it's, as you say, it's wider, it's, you know, it's more of a second shot course. So, and a lot of the approaches are relatively short. They're wedges or they're short irons. So, you know, for me, I'm often looking at players who are good from that kind of 125 and in kind of distance, and as you say, decent on and around the greens as well. Because at the end of the day, you're going to need to, in decent conditions, you're going to need to get to 20, as you said, 20 under or better than that to be in with a chance of winning. So you can't go there with a cold putter. You need to be getting up and down. You need to be avoiding bogeys. You need to be making the most of your chances when you've got a wedge in your hand. I'd kind of agree with that.
Yeah, there's proximity in there, I agree. I think Snedeker was 19th in 13. This proximity to hole. Walker was 26th, but it was blowy that year. Snedeker 24th again in 15. Vaughan Taylor, the year that I had Mickelson cock up, he was third, 250-1 or 350, something crazy. Mm. And Jordan Spieth was, again, 10th for proximity to hole. So for me, it's putter, and you can see why Jason Day does well around here. It's putters who have the ability to hit or have got the immediate skill where they're hitting tons of greens or a good amount of greens arriving at Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with it. Now, I haven't firmed up completely where I'm heading in terms of my tips. I'll be publishing tomorrow morning, no doubt. But what I can do is read out the top 10 of this week's predictor model that I've pulled together already. So just, of course, golfbettingsystem.co.uk. You can come and use our predictor models both for the European Tour and the PGA Tour, free of charge. The variables I'm using, just to talk you through them, current event top 10s is vital here. I don't think any previous winners here for a long time haven't had at least one top 10 here. It seems to me that some immediate form, either be that at the Sony Open, at Torrey Pines for the Farmers Insurance, or last week at Scottsdale, is a prerequisite. Bogey avoidance is clearly very, very important, as are making birdies. But really, I've maximised the putting average variable this week. I'm really looking for guys with a hot putter. And this is what it's come out with. Also, of course, I've also used our West Coast variable. Guys that have done well on the West Coast swing in the past. You could also, of course, use our coastal positive variable as well. Guys that play well by the sea. Top 10 here for you. I've got Matt Kuchar at 10. Patrick Reed at 9. John Rahm at 8. Pat Perez at 7. Phil Mickelson at 6. 5 is Jason Day. 4 is Brent Snedeker, 3 is Dustin Johnson, 2 is Jordan Spieth, and number 1, you're thinking, so what, someone's beaten Spieth, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, John Rahm, and Rory McIlroy in your statistical model, even though I haven't said Rory McIlroy. Yeah, he is in top. Chesson Hadley, he tops the predictor model this week.
Played well yesterday, finishing off... For a tie for fifth.
Well, I will tip up Hadley. I mean, how can you not? And if you look at him here, he's an interesting runner this week. He really is an interesting runner. He's played here three times. Now, when he played here in 2014 or 2015, both years, he finished in 10th place. So he's had three appearances, two 10th place finishes. Now, back in 14 and 15, he was nowhere near the player he is at the moment. He's definitely gone back to the web.com tour and he's come back and he's clearly worked out how to start playing the game and not just slash it all the time. And it was interesting. I read an interview with him at Scottsdale last week and they basically said to him, oh, you never played any good round here. You know, what's the difference? And he said, I'm thinking more strategically about what I need to do at each course. And I've also started to get my head around the fact that even though I haven't been to, I haven't done well on courses in the past, if I play a certain style of golf that marries up to that particular course, I can be competitive.
Yeah, well, it's just maturing as a player and as an individual, yeah, isn't he? So he's starting to understand how to manage his game and his career. Fair play. As I say, he was good last week, and I couldn't dispute that. I think he's in great overall form if you look at his last 10, 12 events, including the web.com. Why not? Why can't he back up what he did last week and go a step further? I know it's a cracking field out there, but looking at the prices you're getting out there at the moment, 55's out there right now. And that's with only a handful of the bookmakers up. So
if you're prepared to take the five each way and a quarter, he's 66 right now with BetVictor.
Right, okay. That's good.
That is a good price on Hadley.
Yeah.
The other thing to point out to listeners is they have a kind of professional tournament there. I think it's they offer about $300,000 each November. And it used to be sponsored by Callaway. But this year it was sponsored by TaylorMade. It's the Pebble Beach Invitational, I believe it's called. And what you get is you get a lot of web.com players, a lot of senior players that play the Champions Tour player. And in the past, there's been some decent players. I'll just read you through some names. 2010, Pat Perez was third in it. 2011, Jonas Blix. We know that Blix has done well here. He finished sixth in that particular Pebble Beach Invitational. 2012, William McGirt, Billy Horschel, James Hahn, Jimmy Walker. Now, Jimmy Walker came sixth there in 2012 in that tournament. Then he won here in 2014. 2013 is interesting. Kevin Kisner won it. Second place, Chesson Hadley. So that's another little tick in the box for me. Hadley has clearly played four tournaments, professional tournaments there. He's finished second, 10th and 10th. So yeah, I think he's a cracking price this week. And you can see him being one of these guys. I've also noticed with Hadley, he's not scared of actually linking decent performances together. He seems to be a momentum player. He actually gets confidence.
Yeah. If you look, going back to the back end of last year on his web.com, just looking at his finishes now, he won the Boys Open, second at the DAP Championship the week after, 46th at the web.com Tour Championship, then finished third, second, fourth in three consecutive events on the PGA Tour. So clearly was playing well, paid out three consecutive weeks on the PGA Tour for each way backers, and he's coming off the top five last week.
I'm always getting comments, you guys, your accents, they're very, very funny. Always getting this kind of stuff. I believe it's Boise.
Oh, okay.
Boise Open.
So how do you pronounce Shay then? Ches Rubin.
Well, this debate goes on not just in this country but in America. I've always been led to believe that it's Chay Reavy rather than Ches.
Right, okay. I'm always thinking Ches.
And I was listening to Dave Tindall on his podcast the other day, and they were having the same debate. Right. Is it Ches or Chay? I go Chay.
I'll call him Ches and we'll just agree to be different.
Potato, potato, isn't it? But yes, the other thing, good thing about Hadley as well, he's really got his bogey avoidance under control. So I think there was eight bogeys last week at Scottsdale. And like you said, that shows maturity. Now you compare that to Justin Thomas, who, and I know, I say this with a pinch of salt, But Thomas at the moment seems to be in this kind of mindset. And I think a lot of this might be that Jimmy Johnson's not on the bag. It's a lot of it's total attack. So it was six straight birdies in round three on Saturday, wasn't it? I'm getting excited at the wife's party when I'm sneakily looking at the phone. Yeah, I'm thinking he's right in the mix here. It was all very US Open Erin Hills type stuff.
People talking 59.
Yeah, I'm at the bar buying another round. Come on, lads, Thomas is moving, and then he's not moving anymore.
Moving backwards.
But Hadley had maturity last week, just the eight bogeys in total, which another real... I think if you look at previous winners here, the Sneds, the Spieths, forget about Vaughan Taylor, that was just a total shot in the dark. They've all played some very strong golf in the preceding tournaments leading up to it in terms of minimising bogeys. So I can see Hadley... Well, he's definitely in the shape for me in the tips next week. The other one that I'm absolutely 100% right on, and he was one of the names that I read out in the top 10 of the predictor model, is Pat Perez. Now, I've been saying to you Pat Perez for this for a couple of weeks, haven't I?
Yeah. No, he's playing well, Pat. He's stepped up a gear. He came over to the European Tour a couple of weeks ago. He played well. I forget where exactly he finished, but he was, he was on the fringes of contention all the way through, and he's getting a wider experience of golf by doing that. I think that's good. 29th he finished at the Dubai Desert Classic in the end, but he got closer than that at one point. He went out in 28 or 29 for the back nine on Saturday, I believe. So he's clearly in some decent nick, and that's off the back of what finishing fourth at the Tournament of Champions early doors.
I think the best bogey number at Dubai was, I think it was four bogeys. That might have even been Hai Tong Lee. Perez only got eight, so he's within four. So I like that. He did put a nice run together one of the rounds, didn't he? He went real low. I think it's like six birdies in eight holes or something. And then it
picked... Yeah, a couple of eagles he got on the same. I think it was either 28 or 29 he went out and... Yeah, on the more scorable back nine, but even so, to produce that kind of scores.
I think, firstly, though, Pat Perez of 2 years ago would never have even entertained going to Dubai. Pat Perez of 2 years ago probably wouldn't have been offered a nice, healthy check. But Pat Perez of 2 years ago wasn't also ranked 19th in the world. And he reminds me, Paul, I might be wrong here, but he reminds me of Jimmy Walker of a few years ago. There was always something there with Jimmy, wasn't he? He was a great putter, and he took forever and forever and forever, and he kept getting into all of these contending positions on a Sunday and doing a Gary Woodland, doing a Graham Dillette. Yeah. But then he won, didn't he? 2013, I think he won at Courdival, and then he won quite quickly again at the Sony Open, and from that point on, he got on a roll, and he actually started to believe, I belong in this. I've got my head around it. And mentally, even though I was going into a situation where I could play some great classical golf courses and contend, but I would eventually go backwards. Once he'd got his head around the fact that he could win, he could convert, he went on to bigger and better things. Clearly, he won the PGA Championship in 20... Was it last year? No, it was 2016, wasn't it? Yeah, 2016 he won.
Oh, he's a good player, Jimmy, and prolific on the West Coast. Once he got his head round it, all as you say.
Now I'm not saying Pat Perez is a major champion. Before I get tons of abuse, I'm not saying that Pat is a major champion. But if you look at Pat and you look at his CV and you look at the golf courses where that guy has contended and finished fourth and fifth and sixth, you pretty much go to any of the best classical golf courses on the PGA Tour, and that guy has gone very, very well at all of them.
Yeah, and he can score low. I'm going back to, I'm sure it was the Bob Hope Classic back at the time. Didn't he shoot 30 under 29?
Yeah, over 5 days. Like that. Yeah, and that's another feather in the cap, isn't it? He's won a Pro-Am in the past.
Yeah.
So he's not scared of the slow speed of play. I think I read an interview about when he finished fourth here in 2015, the fact that That week he played with a close friend that he's played in pro-ams previously. So that, and he said that puts me at ease. So I just get the feeling with Perez. And the other thing that I've took note of, and he mentioned this in his pre-tournament interview at the Dubai Desert Classic, he's a little bit peeved the fact that he won the CJ Cup. He won the CIMB Classic in Malaysia on the PGA Tour. He then went to the CJ Cup in Korea and finished fifth. Big, big handfuls of FedEx Cup points, yeah? But none of those results went towards the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, bit frustrating for him.
And he said, you know, I should be sitting in third or fourth spot in the Ryder Cup standings, but actually I'm in about 12th or 14th. And you just got to get the feeling with him that that could be another motivator. We're on a course where I think he's finished, he's got three top 10s, a couple of top 5s. We know that he's also done well at that Callaway Invitational in the past. It's the perfect golf course for him in my mind. Again, a guy that's hitting lots of greens at the moment, but is a natural putter and can putt very well on power.
Yeah, no, I think relative to his world ranking and the game he's currently playing, generally is overpriced compared to what he should be. Now, you've got five fantastic players ahead of him in the market, and you know a few more, but you've got the five guys at the very top, and you know. How many of the each way places are going to be taken up by those? You'd expect two or three at the very least.
If someone held a gun to your head and said to you, you've got to take one of the top five, who would you take?
DJ. He just loves Pebble Beach. He loves Ben. You know, in your preview, you talk about the number of times that he's won on power or bent power tracks, and I think it was eight that I read.
Yeah, eight. Yeah.
You know, he's prolific on it. He's, you know, he's the best player in the world. And if you were to give me just a one and done, it'd be DJ every time. I think John Rahm. I'm sure at some point he will be world number one, but right now, in my mind, each time he gets to the point where he could go and win in the tournament, as he's done the last two events, something's just saying to him, you go and win this tournament, you're going to be world number one. And is it holding him back?
It definitely destroyed him at the Farmers, didn't it? Because the first two rounds, he was imperious. Yeah. And as we said last week, I think he was almost, he got very close to evens in play.
Yeah.
And then he admitted it in his interview at Scottsdale, it all got too much for him. Last week, he couldn't get to world number one. But it's clearly, he knows it's close. And he started to show some real frustration yesterday, didn't he, at his performance. And I know for a fact, I think I read on Twitter that he can get to world number one this week, but he needs to win the tournament and Dustin Johnson needs to finish 42nd or less.
Right, okay. He's getting within touching distance each week, isn't he?
He is.
You know, even if he doesn't get right over the line, he's getting very close to it. Given that he was, you know, he was next to, you know, he was a shot behind Ricky Fowler going into the final round, and Ricky Fowler, for all of his quality, his conversion from 54 holes isn't the best. You know, we'd have fancied him to give Ricky a real run for his money yesterday, but the pair of them just dropped away, which was very surprising. But yeah, going back to your original question, I'd take DJ over any of the other four there.
Yeah, I think anyone sensible would, wouldn't they? And the bookmakers know that, hence 13-2.
Yeah, it's 13-2. I mean, that could either be a good price in hindsight at the end of it, because you're not going to get that kind of price about him on many tournaments. You know, that's purely because there's so much competition there. But I mean, the beauty of that is you've got five players there taking up a huge chunk of the market. So further down, I mean, looking at the likes of Lefty, who played very well last week, yeah, he kind of made a mess of the final hole, which from our perspective was great because we got a bit more out of the Chesson Hadley bet. But, you know, was he won three times around Pebble on this particular tournament?
He has, yeah. Clearly, he hasn't won for a period of time. We all know that. The year that I did pick him for this, the one where Vaughan Taylor won, where Phil got to just on the fringe in two on the final hole, and he needed a birdie to get into a playoff, and he chunked the chip. I mean, can you imagine Phil Mickelson chunking a chip, and it weren't, he wasn't a hard chip.
Yeah.
And I was just, again, I had head in hands, and you just knew he was going to burn the edge, burnt the edge. But that year, he finished seventh for GIR at Scottsdale, and at that point, you really take notice. Oh my God, yeah, Phil's hitting tons of greens. He isn't doing that at the moment. That's the one negative about it. I think of the top five, for me, I wouldn't take John, I wouldn't take Rory, and I wouldn't take Jordan, because Jordan's putting at the moment is shocking.
Yeah, that's not his, you know, that's not him, is it? He's the best putter in the world, in my view. And
why they've tinkered with his putter, fundamentally, the routine and what he's doing, heaven only knows. But, yeah, it was tangible on the putting average on the predictable this week. Doesn't appear. He's very lowly on there, yeah? And he doesn't appear in my 10-week rolling stats for putting or anything.
He's dropped right away in terms of his putting average. Yeah, and it's, you know, tee to green wise,
he's unbeatable. He's hitting as many greens as anybody in the field every week, but he just can't putt.
Yeah. You know, he will put that right. He will turn that round, and he will win and easily win a tournament at some point when that putter sparks to life, and it can't stay where it is. Either he'll get his head around the tweaks and changes that he's making, or he'll give it all up and go back to where he was before, and it'll all click together.
He will get it right, and you will actually get a half decent price on at that particular event where it actually starts going right for him.
Yeah.
One thing that's just irking me, and it's just digging in the back of my mind, is do you think Jason Day's got any chance of going back to back?
Done it before.
Yeah, I know he's done it before, yeah.
He has done it before.
He was in the top 30 for greens in regulation at where he won at Torrey Pines a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself at Torrey Pines because I saw the day before he pulled out of the Pro-Am with a bad back. And that's not the first time he's done that and gone and won a tournament the same week. So
I don't think he could barely walk on the Thursday when he shot a 73. They reckon he was hobbling off the golf course the Thursday.
Yeah, I've seen it all before. That's got to be as soon as you see him struggling or pulling out of the Pro-Am because he's saying he's injured. That's got to be the time to lump on. What did he drift out to, 22s?
He was 22s pre-event. You'd have got more than that.
Yeah.
In play, far more.
But yeah, you know what happened. If I back Jason Day, then he'll get a round in and then pull out for real because he's got a bad back. So that's always the danger of backing a short price player, anyway. But yeah, not for me. Okay, yeah. If one of the five, it'd be DJ. But to be fair, I think I'll leave the top five alone myself this week.
Another player, I tell you, other players that I'm playing with, not physically, but mentally, in terms of if they were to be included. This one will perturb many, but there's a little, for me, there's juice in Pat Kuchar this week. I'm seeing 40-1.
He does string results together. Not necessarily wins, but top fives and top sevens, yeah.
You'd have said the same thing about Gary Woodland. He does, yeah. He strings them together. He hit lots of greens last week. And when I say lots of greens, he was in the top 25 for greens in regulation. And he's finished sixth here at the US Open. I think he's got another sixth here at another AT&T. He hasn't played this for ages. And then he decided to play it last year, missed the cut. I suppose he's getting used to the course again. Just get the feeling with him. When you look at his record and how he's done on the West Coast, he ticks a lot of boxes. He really does. Patrick Reed potentially, although I can never call Reed correctly. Patrick Cantley's of some interest. I'm definitely going with Chesson Hadley, as we've discussed. Kevin Kisner, I'm seeing Kevin Kisner at 66-1.
That's a good plan.
That's a big price for Kevin Kisner. He was 10th here last year.
There's a bit of disparity there because he's as short as 33s as well with some bookies. So,
well, his stats are fantastic. They're ticking every single statistic that I want to, but he doesn't seem to have strung the whole tournament together yet so far this year.
Perhaps it's his way.
That doesn't mean he can't, does it?
No.
And the other one that I like the look of is James Hahn.
Playing well, James. Jimmy.
He seems to have got a little bit of consistency in his game, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's not normally his game, is it? He normally misses eight cuts on the trot and then wins at 500-1 and everyone's, you know, everyone knows that he's capable of winning, but you'd never pick him out because his current form's so dire. But yeah, he seems to have turned that on its head. Whether that means that he'll just sit in those kind of contending and non-paying positions from a betting perspective, or whether he can convert one, remains to be seen.
Well, on my rankings, Paul, for classical golf courses, yeah, he sits 15th out of the field. So that's a decent ranking for a guy that hasn't. Because my numbers run over a 5-year window. Yeah. So he's in the top. He's 15th ranked for classical golf courses. We know that he's won at Quail Hollow, a real beauty of a course. We know that his first ever PGA Tour victory was at Riviera, which is on the, you know, down in Los Angeles. He's finished third here at Pebble Beach. He's finished in the top four at PGA West, and he got in a playoff at the Sony Open this year, didn't he? Mm,
yeah.
So every single West Coast golf course there, apart from Torrey Pines, he's at the moment seriously contended at. Yeah. And he's putting absolutely fantastically, Amone. He almost gained a stroke on the field at the Sony, 0.8 of a stroke on the field at the Career Builder, and last week in Phoenix, 1.3 strokes to the field in putting.
Yeah. Oh, and he can convert when he gets in that position.
Well, this is, he doesn't go away, does he, when he's actually in contention?
No. 80-1 about him at the moment.
Yeah, I know. That's a big price in my mind. I think there was also another tournament last year, wasn't there? It was the one where him, Billy Horschel and Jason Day were contending at TPC Four Seasons. And again, he was there right to the 72nd hole. I think he lost out to the... he didn't get in a playoff by one shot.
Yeah.
He does hang about, but he's a bugger to get right, James Hahn. But again, he was in the top 20 last week for greens and regulation, and he putted beautifully. So that's where my thoughts are. It has to be said, the AT&T Pebble Beach. I will confirm. I will confer in my mind overnight and write up in the morning. So they should be out mid-morning tomorrow UK time. That will be my full golf betting preview tomorrow. Right, do you want to take us through the Super 6, Paul?
Yeah, I can do. I'm just going to give you one name on the...
On the
Pebble Beach before we go.
Go on.
One that caught my eye further, quite a lot further down the list, was Tom Hoge.
Yeah, Tom Hoge.
Hoge, I was going to say, you're going to tell me that I've mispronounced his name.
Tom Hoge, apparently.
But I'm looking... I'm looking for decent wedge players. When I went through his stats for last year and this year, he's, you know, from those kind of 125, 100 yards in, he's very, very prominent. Hitting greens at the moment, finished third at the Sony, 12th at Torrey Pines. You know,
he's gone up a gear, hasn't he? He really has. I've also got it in my analysis here that he's had some decent coastal results. Third at the Sony, clearly, yeah?
Yeah.
12th at Torrey Pines, and there's another one hidden away
somewhere. 10th at Puerto Rico, I noted down as well. So, there's...
And 9th at the McGladrey, or the RSM Classic as it is now. So he's got some coastal form there as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, and he finished 7th at the Shriners, another low-scoring event. Just looking at the different aspects to it, there was a lot to like about him for a 200-1 shot.
I tell you, he was one that came out in my analysis, Hoge, because he's ticking pretty much every box across either this season or like. What price is he?
200s with seven places you can get.
The thing with him is he can putt as well, can't he? I'm seeing him 39th for putting average so far this season.
Yeah.
42nd for scrambling, and he's 37th for bogey avoidance.
Well, if you look, you're going back to the Sony, he shot 65, 65, 64 first three rounds. He shot 70 in the final round to let Patton Kazia through.
He went in the last group, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, he should be better for that experience. Should help build him from a you know, a personal perspective.
I think he's a West. I think he's from that side of the United States. Something's telling me Utah or somewhere around there.
North Carolina, I think he was born, but even so, it's again, if I'm looking for something a little bit further down the list, that's one that caught my eye.
Where are what price you see?
200 to 1.
Jeez.
With 7 places at the moment.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah, North Carolina. He lives in Fort Worth, so interesting. Yeah, okay, 200 to 1.
Quite a tasty.
That is
price,
a tasty price. That is nice, must be said. But that's one that might have to go in. The other one that I really do like the look of stats wise, and who has got a link to here, California wise, is our friend Bo Hosler. Is it Hosler or Hosler?
Hosler, I think. Again, that's how Bo? I pronounce it.
Say that again?
Yeah, it's Bo. Yeah, Bo Hosler, I think.
Yeah. I'm seeing some very strong putting numbers.
Oh, he's a great putter, punter.
He can scramble, and his bogey avoidance is good as well.
Yeah, he's a bit up and down, but when he's putting well, he's a very good putter.
He made his professional debut here at that Callaway tournament that I mentioned.
Right.
And he finished 9th.
Okay.
So he's got some. He knows the courses because I believe they play a similar course rotor.
Mm.
And what price are we seeing for Hosler? Hosler. He has been found out by the bookmakers because I know that, you know, that we've been, lots of guys have been tipping him up over the recent time. I'm seeing a little bit of 100 to 1 about him. But
yeah, he's getting a bit of 100s. Yeah.
He's 80 to 1 with Coral, 7 places.
Mm. Yeah, as I said, there's still a few bookies to come up, so you might get some movement on that price as well.
Decisions to be made, Paul. Right, go on, Super 6.
Super 6, yeah. So this is one of the new format events. So it's kind of a hybrid between stroke play and match play. And what they do is they play the first 3 days as you would play any stroke play tournament. So they play standard 18 holes. They make the cut after 36. It's the top 65 and ties. And then it all changes on Saturday night. They get to the final leaderboard after 54 holes. And from there, the top 24 go through to Sunday and everyone else goes home. Now, the top 8 in the leaderboard at that point are seeded and they get put into the seeded into the match play element that goes on Sunday. And the other 16 aren't seeded and they'll play each other for the chance to play one of the seeds, effectively. So Sunday is one of these new style days where it's, it's a different format of golf to what we're normally used to seeing. So they play 6 holes in a match play format, and if they get to the end of the 6 holes and the match is tied, they go to one of these 100-yard playoff holes, that will decide where who goes through. So it's quick fire action. In match play over 6 holes, you can get 2 or 3 holes ahead very quickly, and it's game over. So things can change very, very quickly. A lot of drama. And I think it went down well last year. It went down well with me because I'd backed Brett Rumford, 50 to 1. He was the 54-hole leader. He was 5 shots clear at that point. So I'd backed him in the outright market, and I was kind of kicking myself I hadn't taken him in the 54-hole market at that point. But then, he was playing the best golf of the whole field and went on to win the overall tournament, beating Fatura Kongwatmai in the final game. It was a good week for me, definitely. But yes, it's and that does kind of tell you a story, actually, because you've got 2 different ways to play this. You can either play it as an outright tournament where you can bet on the winner. Because it's match play, you will get down to a final 4, so the bookies are paying 4 places for the outright market. Some of them are paying quarter of the odds, some are paying a third, so do have a look before you make those final decisions. And the prices are still coming up, so we haven't got the full list of terms yet, which I'll include in my preview tomorrow. The alternative is you play the 54-hole market, and you just take it as effectively a stroke play tournament that ends on Saturday night. And you get a different set of odds there, and generally the bookies will go back to the standard conventional five places quarterly odds, or you may get some extended, but I'd guess that generally it'll be 5.25. So yeah, it's an interesting format. I quite enjoyed it last year. The shame actually is that the field this year is pretty poor.
It wasn't great last year though, was it?
No, not particularly. But
I think they flew Louis down there on a check, didn't they? Louis Oosthuizen.
Yeah. Louis came in as the favourite, and he made it through to the latter stages of the match play, but he didn't pay out from an each way perspective for backers.
And am I right in thinking that Tyrrell Hatton was signed up, and he said, "Actually, I can't be asked to spend sort of the next 3.5 years on a plane. I'm not going to come down."
I think the official line is that he's injured, but yeah,
right, okay.
Tyrrell's pulled out. They replaced him with Beef, so Andrew Johnson's come in, and he's kind of the where all the media focus is at the moment,
as it would be.
And also Kiwadek Avi Barnrat's come in as an 11th hour addition to the field, so it's bolstered it to a degree there. But yeah, other than that, it's not great. Westwood's playing, and actually, as I'm looking at the odds right now, Westwood is the joint favourite for this tournament, so that kind of gives you an indication of where we are. It's an interesting market, actually, if you look at the outright market, because bear in mind, whatever happens by Saturday night effectively gets reset. So as we saw last year, Rumford was 5 shots clear on Saturday night. On a stroke pay tournament, what would he be? Odds on, probably. You know, just the other side of just this side of being odds on, and that tournament he'd have been 7, 8, 10 to 1, that kind of price going into Sunday morning, because they're going into a match play scenario and anything can happen. So looking at the odds for the overall market, you've got 25 to 1 the field at the moment,
right?
Which you generally won't see on a on any event, let alone a European Tour or PGA Tour event.
No, it's that kind of price you get on these alternate events, isn't it? On the PGA Tour, where the bookmakers really aren't that sure at all.
No, exactly. So it does, and as I say, you've got this choice between going for the outright market or going for the 54-hole market. And I guess what you'll need to do individually is to get an idea of what the players that you're interested in backing, and see what the relative prices are. Because the last thing you want to do is find that you've backed someone who's absolutely romping it on Saturday night and then gets knocked out the first time they play the day after. Although, as I said, the top 8 do get seeded, so they effectively miss the first round of the match play and get a bye to the second round, in effect.
Can I throw a name at you that's just jumped out of Odds Checker at me?
Yeah, go on.
And I'm saying this completely off my own back, listeners. Paul and I haven't converted on this whatsoever. I'm seeing Torbjørn Olsen at 25 to 1. Now, is it in my mind that he won that quirky event last year near St Albans, didn't he? And hasn't he finished second or third around this place in the past?
He's won on this track. So this is the track that used to be used for the originally it used to be used for the Johnny Walker Classic.
Yes,
going back to 2002 and 2003, and that was won by the likes of Retief Goose and Ernie Els. Won there with a European Tour record score, 29 under.
Because he isn't playing abysmal golf, is he? He's playing quite reasonable.
He's playing Olsen golf, which is kind of he tickles along, doesn't get particularly good scores. He didn't get particularly good finishes, missed the cut last week, and then he pops up and wins.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can see him potentially doing something. But you're right. He's he won here when it was the Perth Invitational 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. I forget exactly which year it was now. Clearly played a course, and the fact that he's won here, Brett Rumford won here last year, tells you something about the track, because it's. If you look at it on paper, it's a classical track, dog legs. It's in Perth, it's near the coast. It's not right on the coast, but it's not far from the coast. You get the afternoon breeze that blows up here, the Fremantle Doctor. So it can be quite, on paper, it can be quite a tricky course.
Yeah.
But the reality is, it's scorable. They get into, last year, Rumford was 17 under through his 3 rounds when they went into the match play. So clearly you can get a decent score going here. And it can't be tight, because you've got the likes of Rumford and you've got the likes of Olsen, who are nowhere near the straightest of the tee. and they're getting themselves over the line. So it's one of these wider classical tracks, and you're thinking more along the lines of a kind of a an Italian Open style in terms of scorable but tree lined.
Okay,
so that's the kind of course you're looking at.
What made you go for Rumford last year, apart from the fact that he's a Perth native? What was the one thing that you looked at, his statistics or his build up, and said actually he's right on it?
For me, this is there's two ways to get around this course. You can either be a metronomic greens and regulation machine. So Oosthuizen has one round here. Ernie Els, you know, these are kind of names that you could say, well, okay, if he's going to go and hit 90% of greens and regulation, make, you know, 1.75 putts there or thereabouts, he can get himself to 20 under par. Last year it was quite windy, and it often is around this place. And Brett Rumford's got one of the best, if not the best, short game on the European tour, and you know it's right up there with the a lot of the best players with short games in the world. And for me, you tie that together, the fact that he is from Perth, he's a Perth native, he can stay in his sleep in his own bed when he's here, he's got a lot of support, of course. He's got some relatively good form around the track before he won last year. Just looking at his form, 27th, 22nd, 36th, 6th, 19th, 7th before he won. So there was no disasters in there, a couple of top 10 finishes. He uses his place for practice rounds when he goes back home. You know, he clearly takes this particular event or playing on this track for... he takes it seriously, so... and I had a look at him last year, and his incoming form wasn't particularly great until you bear in mind that he was playing well in, I think it was the South African Open, and pulled out halfway through because he had a problem with his stomach, which they thought may have been a recurrence of a more serious problem that he'd had a year before. So he had it checked out, no problem, went home, and everything was hunky-dory. Warmed up the week before on a little Australasian tour event, finished top 20. And it just seemed like he was bubbling under. And sure enough, he came out and played some fantastic golf.
Who are you seeing this week then?
Well, I'm going to stick with Rumford. I'm seeing Rumford at 33-1. And given the strength of this field, I see no reason to go against him. He's shown a decent enough bit of form at the Dubai Desert Classic. Nothing serious. But again, it was kind of bubbling under. He got himself into the top 20 or thereabouts a couple of the rounds during the week, and eventually finished 37th. But that's no disaster for Rumford. He's had a week back at home since to prepare for this. A lot of the guys went from there straight to Malaysia, and he's flown straight back home to get himself ready for this particular event. He finished 12th in the Australian Open just before Christmas. So there's some decent enough form there, I think. And say, given the strength of the field, I don't see any reason to oppose that. The only question for me is, until we see the full range of markets, as to exactly how I play that, but I suspect it will be in the outright market.
Okay.
Rumford's there. Another one who's caught my eye over the last couple of weeks is David Lipsky. He had some decent course form for last week. And bizarrely, he opened up at 125-1 last week and got absolutely hammered that price. And by the time it started, he was 40-1. So I think that shows you how out of kilter that particular price was. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, he was right in the mix at various points. I think he was up to 7th or so at halfway last week. Finished 17th overall in the end. So, you know, again, he's kind of up under the radar to a certain degree. He was 6th in Dubai the week before. Scrambling stats have been really strong the last couple of weeks, kind of in the high 70s, 80%.
Okay.
But for me, he's better on faster greens, and I think last week the greens were too slow for him. So take him to a style of track that he enjoys. He's got a lot of formal classical kind of courses. He won at Cairns. He's finished 3rd at the Italian Open, 2nd back at Laguna National, which was another one of these traditional kind of classical style courses. And you coupling that with faster greens, these should be up to about 11 on the stimp this week. So there should be a marked difference between the speed of the greens to last.
Are they Bermuda or bent grass?
These are bent. Yeah, they're classed as pure bent. Although I expect there's a bit of local grass that's grown in there over the years. But yeah, they're good, decent greens.
He's got a decent record on bent, has he?
He has, yeah. He can putt on both, actually. He's one of these versatile players. But yeah, if you look back to some of the, like the Portugal Masters type events, he's putted in the low 1.6s in the past. So he can certainly get on with it. He finished ninth here in 2016 when it was the Perth International as well. So he's got a bit of course form to go back on as well. So yeah, I'll be adding both of those two. So you've got Rumford and if we're looking at Lipsky right now, there's a bit of 28s available on Lipsky. So they're both guys that are close to the top of the market. The market's strange because it doesn't thin out that quickly because you've got a starting price of 25s and you've got an awful lot of players around the 25, 28, 33, 40 to 1 kind of bracket. One that caught my eye further down, a little further down, is Alejandro Canizares, who's he's actually in a similar kind of position to where Rumford was last year, because Rumford didn't have a card at the time when he arrived on this event. So he was playing for his card as well. Canizares had a wrist problem, you might remember, last year. Missed quite a big chunk of the season as he got over this wrist issue. So he started this year, or the last couple of events, on a medical extension. And he needed to get something like €100,000 out of the...
And his last event was at his home course of Valderrama, wasn't it?
Well, no, he had a couple of events. He had Abu Dhabi and Dubai to finish off this final, to get himself finally over the line. I think he missed out in the end by what was effectively two shots. So he wasn't far off, but he comes here without a card. So he needs to take advantage of these events that he's getting some kind of start in, because it's such a poor field. They're actually kind of... They're dragging down further, plumbing the depths to get their field filled
for
a week. So, but again, if you go back through his history, he won the Hassan Dur Trophy, which is on that classical Trent Jones track over in Morocco. He's finished fifth and fourth in the Paul Laurie match play the last two times it's been played. So, should he get himself through to the latter stages, then. He's got the ability or the history to suggest that he can do well in the match play format as well. So, yeah, I think he's got a chance as well, Canizares. He's one of those players that I've backed a few times over the years, and he always seems wholly logical until you see where he actually ends up.
You got a predictor model top 10 that you can run the listeners through quickly?
Yeah. Let's take you through. Where that sits at the moment. So going in reverse order then, 10th Wade Ormsby, who's got a decent record on this track, but he's been in awful form the last two or three events. I think it's just miscut after miscut, which is surprising. He ticks a lot of boxes, I must say, Wade, if you can overlook the current form. Afi Bainrat in 9, Adam Blythe in 8, Gaganjeet Bhullar, another one of the India. Perhaps you'll see an Indian kind of halo effect from Sharma's win last week.
It's happened before,
absolutely. Bhullar in 7th, Ryan Fox in 6th, Canizares comes in at 5th actually on the predictor, Lipsky in 4th, Olsen, who you mentioned, in 3rd, Jason Scrivener, who finished, I think he finished 3rd. I'm sure I tipped him and backed him last year, finished 3rd. And again, he's been in some decent form. I think he finished 6th in Dubai. So there's a decent case to be made about Scrivener.
Didn't
as well.
He win a... he won something in Australia as well, didn't he? His first...
Yeah, he did. He won something over on the Australasian course, Australasian tour before Christmas. New South Wales Open or something along those lines. So yeah, it was, he's clearly capable of screwing her, that's for sure. And top of the tree is Brett Rumford, which I can't dispute, really. I think he's got the best credentials of the players that are here. given his course history, the less tangible things that, you know, about him being a local and, you know, staying at home, the local support and all of that malarkey. So I think Runford's got a good chance this week.
Let's hope for a change of luck this week.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I think you in particular are due a big week. So let's hope we can get one of them over the line.
It would be nice. It's like leading horses to water, isn't it? You can't always make them have a nice drink, cooling drink. But at the moment, there's not a lot of drinking going on.
It will turn around, Steve. Don't you worry.
You have to keep plugging in your way, don't you?
Mm. Absolutely.
Well, thank
you. Yeah, patience.
Yeah, exactly. Patience. I think that's the way that we'll describe it. Thank you for your time, Paul.
Best of luck.
Yeah, best of luck to you. And thanks for listening, guys. It's been a pleasure as always. We will be back again next week. We're podcasting away each and every week here at Golf Betting System. And as ever, it's golfbettingsystem.co.uk. For all of this week's content, our statistics, first round leader statistics, our predictor models, and our weekly previews as well. Thanks for listening, and we will see you again next week. Goodbye.